All right, here we go. The Chris Collinsworth Podcast. Want to give a special shout out to our friends at DraftKings and the DraftKings top-rated sportsbook app. Download the app now and use the promo code PFF for a shot to double your money if a touchdown is scored on one of Saturday's playoff games. If one touchdown is scored, you can double your money. How about that? That seems pretty easy to me. All right, let's move along. We have a fantastic show where two of the great players in the NFL, Richard Sherman and Devontae Adams, talk about playing against each other. Here we go. All right, welcome into the Chris Collinsworth Podcast, starring Richard Sherman, as we do every single week. But today also starring a guy that, he's upgraded the wide receiver position here on this show today, Devontae Adams. All he did this year was 115 catches, 1,374 on the yards, and 18 touchdowns. Now, Richard, that's half of my career right there in one season. I hate to admit it, but that is one ungodly year for this young wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, he's freaking the best receiver in football right now. And, you know, everybody will make their debates and argue. But, I mean, you got to think about what he has to do. And week in, week out, being the one, being ISO, you know, people don't give a lot of, you know, I'm sure they'll man up the rest of the receivers they got. You know, they're talented. Valdez, Scantling, and Lazard. But at the end of the day, it's him and A-Rod making it happen. And for him to have a season like this is crazy when they know he's getting the ball and they know, you know, their tendencies and still can't stop
it. Devontae, give me a little bit on your year. You used to actually play your high school ball, and Richard Sherman would come to your high school to practice, right?
I seen the one sleeve. I seen him when he was wearing 9 back when he was playing wideout still. He didn't know who I was, but I'd be on a little passing period or something, and I'd peep them out there on the field, and I go running out there and with a couple other of my teammates and try to steal a couple little swag points or see if he can steal something from the game or something. Because, like I said, at that point he was a receiver, so I'm watching that. And, just trying to learn. And then, I mean, we ended up connecting a little bit later. Once I was going through the pre-draft visit process, we ended up coming out to Seattle, and I saw him out there, and we chopped it up a little bit about, coming from Cali and just him letting me know what was going on in the league. And at that point, I mean, he was already on top of the game. So I'm just coming in trying to, you know, find my way. And here I run into a guy that I've seen for years before that. So, the whole thing just kind of came full circle.
You told me a story one time that when you first got drafted by the Green Bay Packers, you had to look it up on the map. You had no idea where it was. Is that true?
I knew it was Midwest somewhere, but I mean, as far as if it was north of Nebraska, once you get to the middle of the map over there, I mean, up until this point now I'm better, but back then I really didn't know a whole lot about the Midwest like that. So that is definitely accurate, as embarrassing as it is.
Richard, he also had another one. His birthday is December 24th, right?
Oh.
Yeah, so it's the worst. That's my son's birthday as well. So I know all about this scene, right? And so I said, all right, give me the worst story. Because, right, you know there's always a story, December 24th, right before Christmas. Give Richard the story, man.
Yeah, man, I said, he was asking me, he was like, is there anything special? Is it, you know, any perks or is there any downfall to having your birthday that close to Christmas? I said, of course. Well, I'll give you a perfect one. It's something that I've told to many people, but one time I got on my birthday, morning of, I opened up a present, and it's like an individually, right? It's shaped weird. I'm like, what is this? So I'm tearing it off, and it's one shoe. So I'm like, one shoe? I'm like, all right, whatever. Like, think about it. And the person who got it for me wasn't present. So I'm thinking, like, whatever. I'm younger at this point, so I'm not really putting it together that I'm about to probably get the next shoe the next day. I'm thinking maybe like my mom is joking. She's holding it from me right now. I open up another present. It's shaped the same way the next day, which, you know, they go together. There's my birthday and Christmas gift combined like that.
So bro, that's how it works. For that.
That's crazy.
I want to fight them. Y'all got to step outside.
Hey, they was lucky it was some J's because I told you, everybody know I've been crazy about Jordan my whole life. So it was some J's. It was the 14, so I was kind of excited about it.
Right, right.
Although they did not fit, that's one thing. It was a half size too small, so that those two went together. So
and I know you still like. Forced them on.
Oh, what? You, come on, man. I was forcing shoes on until I got to high school. Now I'm telling you, whatever it took.
Being there, like this.
Curled up, man. Curled whatever up. It took. Well, hey, congratulations, Devontae, on not just your year, but it's been a phenomenal season for the Green Bay Packers. You guys really have put yourself in a position to make a little run. And then, of course, we got the bad news. David Bakhtiari, one of the great players in this league at left tackle, comes out and gets hurt, not even contact, right? Just in practice, and now is out until some point next season.
Yeah, man, it's tough losing one of your best players and, more importantly, one of your best leaders. I mean, that O-line looks up to him more than anybody that I've seen since I've been in there. You know, we've had some legendary players come through here, and it's one thing to be a great player, but to have, you know, to be a leader of men, be somebody who leads by example, go out there, practice hard, and bust your butt every day. And it sounds cliche, but that's really the type of guy that he is. Extremely selfless as far as, you know, he takes care of those guys, getting them gifts, doing things like that for Christmas where it's easy to follow a guy like that. So when it's just some fluke, you know, he's just in a normal pass set, guy rushes outside, and then he takes just a wrong step and he hits the ground like that. And the thing about Dave that I don't know how many people know, he's a big jokester. Like he messes around with you a lot. So when it first happened, I look over and I'm thinking, man, please just be messing with everybody right now, you know, because he's the type to take it too far with stuff like that and make you feel like, you know, something happened. So I'm watching him and I could just see it in his face. He like looked up at me and then he looked back down. He just kind of shook his head like, I can't believe this just happened. So you knew something happened. But for me and Aaron and everybody else who was watching, it was just, you know, we were just hoping basically it would be the, you know, the least amount of pain or least amount of, you know, just hoping it's not an ACL type injury, especially where he was grabbing at it. It looked like it wasn't going to be the inside of his knee. And it turned out to be. So it was unfortunate, but he's been super positive through this whole thing. I called him the night of and he said, man, all I need from you, because obviously I hit him up. What can I do for you? Let me know if I need to bring you anything, help your lady out. Frankie, he just got engaged. I'm like, whatever you need. He said, just win us the Super Bowl, man. Just go win that thing for me. And that's all I really care about. That's all I want. I appreciate everything. But which is, it's beautiful to see, because every time when I get turf toe and I'm out for 4 weeks or a hammy in 2 weeks, I'm emotional and I'm being a baby about it. And I'm not afraid to say, because I want to be out there and I'm competitive. But to have that type of attitude, I mean, that's really the best way, because he could obviously be feeling sorry for himself or draw more attention to himself. But at this point in the season, I think that it's most important for him to be like that. And, you know, it just kind of allows for us and the rest of the team and the rest of the line to continue to go out there with confidence and go play and be able to finish the thing off.
Richard, you saw these guys in the championship game a season ago. What do you think changed with this offense this year? It just seems like we know that Aaron went in and with Matt, and they all sort of got together and they figured out what they did best and what they wanted to throw out and all that kind of stuff. But when you watch Green Bay play this year, what feels different to you?
Aaron's off blood. I mean, it's just that simple. It ain't no jokes, you know, ifs, ands, or buts and playing around. You see off blood, you know. I mean, it's been a couple seasons he's had like this, and I think it was the year we played him in the playoffs when he won MVP. Like, he has a look in his eye. He's out for blood. It does not matter who's in his way. It does not matter what he sees. It, you know, last year, you know, they were a great team and things were going, but this year it's like it's a lot of things. It looks like piled on, and it's like people forgot that he's the guy he is. And so he's out there ready to prove, and he's proving it week in and week out. And it seems like he got Devontae. It seems like he got Tay on the same page, and they're out for blood. So it really doesn't matter. You know, sometimes you run into those situations where you just run into a buzzsaw, and they buzzing right now. So I think it's going to be tough for anybody to go to Lambeau and take their hopes away. You know, I mean, and then you got what happened to Bakhtiari. You know, it sucks, and it demoralizes your team. But when it's right and the way Bakhtiari handled it, it can almost motivate your team. It can almost like give you a rallying cry. Like, it can give you like damn, we got to go out here and do it for them. So everything's a little harder. Everything's a is a little, you know, tougher, you know, and their run game has changed this year. You know, they got a bigger back. They've already had the two dynamic backs they had. And now they got a bruiser.
AJ Dillon, yeah.
Right. And so they're prepared for every scenario. You know, if somebody want to go hand for hand and just run the ball, then they're going to do that. If they want to make it a shootout, they're going to do that. You know, they're prepared for every scenario. So I think that's the big difference.
You know, Devontae, we've done a couple of your games, and it's obvious, you know, some of the motions weren't there a season ago. It seems like Aaron's more comfortable off of play action, more comfortable getting rid of the ball more quickly this season, going ahead and, you know, what do they say, take a profit and take some of those short, quick throws, right? Cool. We've seen Robert Tonyan come on and have a sensational year to help give you a little bit of balance. But if you tried to put your finger on a couple of things this season, what would you say?
I'll just say the execution level has gone to a whole new level. You look at last year, I think based off of who we were playing, how they decided to play us dictated, you know, if we score 30 points, if we score 40 points. But now we're finding different ways to do it. Like you said, you know, we go up to SF. Obviously, they were a depleted team at that point. A lot of injuries. They had the COVID situation. They had a lot of stuff going on. But, I mean, when you lose to a team like that two times in a year, it's tough to respond no matter who they have in there. And they're still the same team. They still stand for all the same things. So for us to go in there and have our mind right and be more confident and say, you know, we're going to attack them. And they're great up front, right? So we got to find ways to still be able to run the ball effectively. We need to be able to have a great balance, whereas before I felt like, you know, great front seven, we were more hesitant to do certain run schemes, and we would just end up throwing the ball, and based off how they're playing, and obviously Richard being the player he is, that's going to take away from a lot of what you can do and what you can consistently do. So I think the pressure we are allowed to consistently applied now is different. And I think that everybody has that confidence that we can go and beat people in different ways now. You look at the Jags game, you look at, or even the Titans game a couple of weeks ago, you look at a game like that where everyone in the building, which is probably like 300 people now, but they all know we had to run the ball because it's snowing. But what do we do? We go out there and throw for more than what we did the week prior to that. And, you know, it was much better weather then. So to be able to still navigate through the elements, playing against good teams who offer, you know, they got a great front seven. They got great guys in the back end. To be able to still go out there and counter them, I think that's what we've done at a higher level this year as a team.
Tell me how much of a difference, because it feels like the more information that Aaron can take in, the better off you guys are. And now with no crowd noise, he's hearing defensive signals. That there was a play on the defensive side for you guys. I think it was Chris Barnes, your linebacker, when you were playing against Carolina. Mm-hmm. And they go up to the line of scrimmage and they start hollering, "Converse, Converse." So everybody on the defense knew immediately it was a quarterback sneak. He punches the ball out and completely turns that game around. Yeah. What is it on the offensive side that has made such a difference with you guys being able to hear the defensive calls?
Well, I think it's a combination of hearing the defensive calls plus just us being able to communicate much more efficiently than what we have in the past. I think if you look at the way that we get up to the ball, we typically will use, or still do kind of, but we use the entire clock. So we get up there and there's about 2 seconds left or a second left and we're snapping the ball. So before it was just motions and things that we had to do. And, you know, we weren't getting lined up as quick, whereas now we're getting lined up quick and now we can see what they're in. And obviously we can utilize our cadence. A-Rod's the best at utilizing that cadence to either draw your sides. And then if nothing else, it'll help reveal coverage. Cause just like we know, we got to snap it before his zero, the defense does too. So they got spots they got to get to. And with a hard count thinking, you know, with 5-6 seconds left, these guys start flying to their position so that they can't, you know, they don't get exposed. The safety has a half field. He's got to go flying over there. So now we know middle of the field open. And, you know, rather than signaling stuff, and which takes more time to get to your brain, we can literally verbally communicate that way. He can tell guys specific routes that they got. And I feel like, you know, once like I was saying with the last question, we're able to counter what they have more effectively and more consistently.
Hey, do you feel like, because you're a California kid like I am, and seeing you in the snow, it's almost like you didn't been raised in it now. Like it don't seem to make a difference. Like
right.
Even just looking at it, I didn't only play in the snow a handful of times, but it affects you mentally going into it. But yeah. Watching y'all throw the ball, watching y'all maneuver, it didn't seem like it damn near made a difference. Like y'all were out there 70 and sunny.
Yeah. How much? I mean, the thing that's most that helps with that, and we hate it. I mean, we hate it so much, but we literally practice in that every single practice we have, we outside, unless it's a walkthrough where we only have jerseys on. We just wearing like t-shirts or whatever. Right. Every time we out there, we have at least a period or at least half of a practice where we're handling the ball. And that I'll never forget 2018. It was Mike McCarthy's last year. We were outside and practiced in minus 22.
Oh,
so you feel what I'm saying? So when I have a game like the Titans game where I know it's going to be cold, it's going to be snowing. I've set my mind almost to a point where it's going to be unbearable to where you can't even play football in it. So when I run out there, you feel cold, but it's more just like a feeling. It's not going to throw the game off. The only thing that where it gets tough is when the ball is actually slick, it starts hitting the snow and it's not dry properly and stuff like that, where, you know, that's it's going to be tough to catch the ball in those type of conditions. But as far as footing and getting used to catching the ball, if everything, you know, the whole operation, as far as getting it, ref wiping it off and all that stuff. And that's part of it for me too. I don't know how many guys pay attention to stuff like that, but you're watching my third touchdown against the Titans. I body caught that thing like crazy because I saw the ref just kind of spot the ball. And it was like a 16-15 play drive. So at that point, I know that this ball is going to be much different than if it was this second or third play of this drive, because, you know, it hasn't been on the ground as long. And, you know, I saw A.J. Dillon carry it. He gets up and he hands it back to the ref. They cover it up with the towel. Now I know I can have confidence on third and 10 on a bomb down the sideline, catching with my hands like that and not having to get my chest on it. Just by, you know, and that's just getting older. And like you said, being in it for so long, those are the type of things where you don't ever get used to the cold, but you get used to defeating the cold, I guess you could say. And little tricks of the trade here and there.
Did they give y'all those? Because the only time we ever were supposed to deal with it was the Super Bowl year against in New York, and they gave us these gloves. They were still, you know, same grip, but they had more padding, more. Did they give those to y'all? Or y'all still?
Well, we have them. I think like different guys do different things. Marquez, what he does is we have like a cotton glove, so he'll wear a bigger glove than what he typically does. So I think he wears like a 2X normally. He'll get like a 3X glove and have like a cotton glove on underneath it. But I'm kind of opposed to that because I like to be able to feel the football. Like, right. I feel like if I had some gloves made from Nike a couple years ago where it was like fleece material on the inside, but it was like too much in between to where I wasn't feeling the ball enough. And I was noticing in practice, I wasn't catching it as clean. A lot of double catches. And with dudes like you, you can't double catch a ball because that's a difference in a completion, catch, tackle, or a ball getting knocked out. And now, you know, I gotta look at you celebrating over the top of me.
We ain't gonna go there.
Hey, Richard, talk about covering Devontae just a bit. I made the point during the broadcast that two different points. One, he makes all of his releases without using his hands at all. It's all feet only with the release, so no swats, no anything. And he gets off clean 99 times out of 100. The second point that became fairly obvious was it's great to have a really smart quarterback, but if you don't have a really smart receiver to play along with him, what difference does it make, right? Because it's all the in-route adjustments that both of you have to be able to figure out. What's it like to play against him?
It's tough. It's incredibly tough. I mean, I can't really describe it because you have to prepare for so much. It seems so simple the way you just said it. You're like, he doesn't use his hands. He just uses his feet. But he uses so much more. You know what I mean? He uses your leverage. He uses the way you move initially against you. Like, he uses everything you give him against you. And that game with Tennessee, he really only went through one package because they were sitting, being patient with him. So he just took off. He just took off. He didn't really even double him up or stutter him or walk in and bang across their face. Like, there's so many things he makes you prepare for that. It's almost like you have to give him room. Give him room to do what he's going to do because – otherwise you can get caught. Like, you might catch him once or twice where you're like, hey, I guessed right, bang, I got a decent jam on it. But if you guess wrong, it's over. If you guess wrong, he has a step and he's faster than whatever time they put down for him is a lie. They lie straight to your face. And I think he did it on purpose. Because I mean, you could play against 4.3s, I didn't play against dudes running 4.2. but he may be faster than all of them because he plays that fast. You know what I mean? Like when he gets going, he's going, he's there. He's in and out of his break and he's catching the ball and he's out, you know, and some guys need to build up, you know, some guys aren't as, you know, more fast and quick. He's quick and fast. So when you have a guy like that, you have to kind of give him space and you almost have to mix it up. You know, you have to mix up, press, throw a quick jam, you know, force him to get out of his comfort zone. But it's rare because no matter what, especially now that he's older and mature and veteran, he don't give a damn. You're not going to get him out of his zone. You don't get him out of his comfort zone. When he was young, you might be able to do something to shake him out of it. But now it's like, it's pick your poison and you got to live with it.
Well, you know what? Let me do this. Let me do this. How do I flip this thing around?
Here we go. Demonstration time. I like it.
You see this? I don't know if y'all ever peeped that. I don't know, Rich, if you've ever seen that, but
I read that.
Okay, yeah. So I've talked about this man at length before, and I put it into an article. But he's changed the game, man. He's changed the game in a way that I kind of have to compare it to the way that Randy Moss came in and changed the game, you know, as far as the cover two safety idea and just there's certain things that it's almost made like. So when I think about a guy like Kevin King, people ask me, you know, what do you think about Kevin King? I think to compare him to Richard Sherman. And I obviously there's different ways, there's different things that he does, the different thing that Kev does that maybe Rich doesn't do. But when you start to become a benchmark for people, or you know, or that's the way you reference the way that guy plays, long, rangy, incredible ball skills. It makes it tough because I've been watching his film. I mean, I feel like I've watched more film than anybody my age in the history of the National Football League. So I've been watching like NFL film since I was in college. And obviously haven't seen him at Stanford and go ball out there. I've been paying attention for a long time and I've always had the most trouble with a guy like that because with the way that I play is, you know, I hop off the line of scrimmage, which is something that they teach guys not to do. And what he used to do, and I had to basically change up the way that I hop because of him. He don't even know that. Now he's figuring that out. But I used to hop. It used to be getting off the ground too much. And before, people would just be waiting to see what I'm going to do when I came back down. But what he was phenomenal at doing since I first started doing that is catching me in the middle of it. He'd be here and he'd be patient. And I don't think it was his initial plan because it wasn't at the snap. You watch guys like Eddie Jackson from the Bears, which he's much different player, much even different position, obviously. But what he's been trying to do this year, every time he's in the slot on somebody, is if it's third and four, third and five, he's standing right in your face and he's trying to time it up on a snap to jump and try to jam you just to throw you off. Rich would sit here in front of you and the ball be snapped. It'd be a half a second go by. I would hop and try to like lull him to see what he was going to do. And then he would just like an impromptu just jab, one hand jab, stab right in the middle of my chest. And I don't know if it was because I wasn't giving him enough credit for how quick he was, how smart he was, or how long he was. But that changed up the whole way that I approach guys with my jump now. Now I'm not really leaving the ground. It's more of like the illusion that I'm doing that, which allows guys to now lunge. So I'm inviting that, but my feet aren't really leaving the ground like that. It's more of an illusion with my upper body, like I'm raising up. And then they go to do that. And then that's when the hands do come into place. You said I don't use my hands much, but now the hands have come into place because of guys like this who my plan is to try to lull them to sleep. I come off the ball with kind of like the hezzy, like you're dribbling the ball, coming up, bringing it up here. And then I would just get a nice flat hand in the middle of my chest, and then I'm coming here, and then now I got to run. He's on top of me still. And then now, you know, the big thing with A-Rod since the beginning of time, I've always noticed, and I think this is why my release package has become – something that people take note of, it's because I've always thought if you want the ball, you need to show that you are open early, right? So if I have a hitch and it's converted to a go versus press, I need to beat this dude and at least show that with separation this way that, you know, it's good enough to get this ball. Even if I'm not over the top, you can back shoulder, you can put this ball wherever you need. I'm playing fast. This guy is not disrupting me right now. So that's the foundation of me. Get open as fast as possible. So what you don't want is a guy that can stab you and throw you off your timing, because then that's when A-Rod looks over here. It don't look right because I'm leaning this way from getting stabbed off balance. He's on balance. He's now transitioning, and he's still on top of me. So that was one of the things that I had a lot of trouble with him early on. And then, like I said, I had to kind of fine tune a couple of the things to find a way still.
You didn't done it. And my thing is, because Stevie Johnson was like the beginning of all that, you know, and I don't know, you know, I don't want to disrespect nobody and say, hey man, did you learn from him or did you watch him?
Because no, I definitely did.
It's basketball. It's you, him, Keenan Allen, Doug had some of it. Like only a couple people who really played that way. And I always wonder, like, if people watched him, because it's a reason Reeve struggled with him, and it was the reason I struggled with him. Like, because you sit there and he just would. He don't care how long it take. Like, I'm not in no rush. I will mix you up six times and then give me my round.
Right. Keenan is, I will say he's a little bit more like him, because Keenan he has the ultimate freedom as far as a lot of the routes that he's running to spend really as much time as what he wants. With this offense that I'm in now, with McCarthy's offense before, I had a little bit more time to be able to finesse and maybe a little bit more footwork. But in Matt's offense, the way that it's so much off of timing, you know, we run the same offense as you guys. If you spend a whole bunch of time at the line of scrimmage, he's sitting here, you know, Jimmy G comes back and he fakes to Mostert. He comes and he's looking right off. He's trying to throw right behind the hook player. And if you're sitting there messing around with your release, now you got to get 10 yards before you break in on the drift route or the strike. If you're not where you need to be, then it throws off the whole play. Now he's moving on and going somewhere else. So now for me, it's just been, you know, making it as efficient as possible. I've always had the footwork and the crossover just from the basketball background. But for me, my growth was about making it as efficient as possible, getting my feet in the ground. And like he said, against the Titans, I'm going to take what you give me. That's the thing that I think is different for me versus, you know, I don't want to say Stevie or anybody else, because I'm not saying that theirs was all choreography, but I have a plan is what I like to call it when I get up there, and I know what leverage I want. And based off of where you are, I need to be able to adapt to that. So I'd say my plan B is what makes me different from the next man that can have, great footwork, is that a lot of the time it may look like that was the plan release when it wasn't. It was just based off what he did. I had to find a way to still win. And, do that by not panicking. So that's probably the number one difference that I would say between me and Stevie is I looked at when I watch his film, it's a lot of footwork, but it looks like he almost decided to do that release, you know. But with me, I may start off that way. And if you jump outside, I feel like I can get my feet back in the ground and play fast enough to where now I'm still able to, you know, beat you with bad leverage or, still look open for A-Rod.
The bomb you hit me for in the NFC Championship last year, I swore to God, I was like, it can't be a 9-ball. He gave me curl split. He gave inside leverage, pushed it up. I was like, it has to be curl. I believed every bit of it. And you took off. I said, this boy. And then Sammy took a page right out of the book the next game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he set it up a whole different way. But when you set that up, I said, I got to write this down in my notebook.
He cracked the code.
What happened with that initially was that I was waiting for the stab. So when you were that close, I didn't. And this is the thing, Chris. Here's the thing: when you're dealing with a guy like this, you have to respect the length. Like, there's speed and all of these things that guys have. I don't have to respect your speed because I'm going to be running as fast as I am. Regardless, I'm running as fast as I can when I'm running my route. So you, as a corner, you have to respect the receiver speed, but as a receiver, you dictate it because we're not racing, you know, so it doesn't matter. You can't run faster than me. The only time where you're 4.2, 4.3, like Rich was saying, really comes into play is if I catch a ball on you and you're trying to catch up and make sure I don't score, like a DK on Buddha type situation. That's when the speed comes into play where I'm like, man, this guy's fast. I don't really care if you're 4.2 or 4.3 because once, you know, it's much harder to get off press a guy like him versus a guy that's just going to run next to me and be able to do whatever. Cause A-Rod's not worried if you're right next to me, as long as I'm saving space on the sideline, running a go route, he's going to throw that thing either way. Cause like I said, we're not racing to the end zone. We race in there once I get the ball and I'm past you, but I would much rather deal with a guy that's fast because when I first showed the outside release to Rich, I didn't really get up on him or get too wide because you have to respect it. If you just say, you know, I'm not going to respect this guy's length, whatever, I'm going to just do my release. And that's when you get caught and then the play ain't any good. So when I first came here, I didn't really get enough. I think I went back, I bellied too far inside. So my mind was like, damn, I'm too tight now. So how can I make this right? So in my mind, it was, I have to make this look like a different route. Otherwise, it's not going to work out. So all this stuff happens real fast. But in my mind, I'm inside the numbers now, having to run a go route. And I'm going to have to track a ball literally as it comes over the top of my head, which is the hardest thing to do.
I thought there was no way because I cut you off outside. Like, I thought you were going to go route. So I was about to give you everything if you had released outside.
In essence, we did this. So I was here. So when I went there and he baseball turned it that way, we both ended up meeting back here. And then, you know what I mean? So I bellied inside and then came back to him to make him think that I was trying to hold that leverage to maybe come back inside again. So then from there, he settled for a quick second. And that's when I tried to take over. And then I said, "Hey, Rob, please throw a great ball here because
I have a feeling that as soon as this podcast is over, both of you guys are going to go back to your notebooks and write this stuff down so you don't forget it. Next time we get hooked up here, let's go.
I had to write it down then. When he did that, and nobody has ever done that. Nobody has ever took that hard of an inside stem because you only take that on like banana cuts or curls or so when he took it, I was like, there's no way he's going nine ball off of this.
It's like, no deep route, huh?
No deep route. I mean, maybe a dig, maybe you'll go that, push me up and dig. But yeah. I was like, no way he's continuing vertical. When you slipped by and kept going, I said,
Uh-oh. That's a problem. Hey, well, I've got you two guys who know the NFC in particular probably better than anybody. Let's talk just a little bit about Devontae as you look ahead, right? We know who the teams are, right? The New Orleans Saints, Tampa Bay, Seattle, the Rams, you go to the Bears. You go right down the list. Is there some team in your mind that – jumps out at you from that list? I mean, Tom Brady now being in the hunt in the NFC. Does anything jump out to you?
I think every team you just said right there, you got to respect it. But like Rich said earlier, coming through Lambeau, like going, I'm going to just be 100% honest, going out to SF, we would much rather have played that game in Wisconsin last year. And would it have made, who knows if it would have made a difference, but just the confidence level, you notice that teams, they act different, they play different, it's a different swag to them. You know, you can go out there and be, you know, wear no shoes and warm-ups out in the cold and take your shirt off and do all of that stuff to try to feel tough and do whatever. I ended up finding out the one guy that was barefoot, that's like his little normal deal, which I guess that's fine. But, you know, there's certain things you can do to try to talk yourself into it, but when you got to come play in Lambeau, and it's windy, it's freezing, we got snow. I mean, I haven't worn sleeves in 7 years. So, I mean, that's just, I'm used to that at this point. You know, like we said, I found out the tricks of the trade and just knowing that I don't want to be out there and I live in it. So, you know, you get a West Coast team or a team like the Saints to potentially come in or a team like the Bucks, not to say that they couldn't do well in it because obviously we both got to go out there and play ball, but just getting that type of edge, just that extra comfort of knowing that the NFC goes through us and goes through Lambeau, that gives you a little different confidence going into it.
It definitely would have changed everything last year. You know, like if it would have shook out and we had to go to Lambeau, it would have been a different game. It would have been a totally different game. It would have been a totally different game for our receivers. It would have been a totally different game for your defense, for everybody, because you cannot prepare for that. I mean, unless you go to a deep freezer and just say, hey, we're gonna do a walkthrough in here or something.
Right, right. You need a pretty big deep freezer to simulate that. So, yeah.
You know, it's really interesting to watch your team change, and you're talking about some of the other teams coming in there. Tennessee, the first quarter, they were sort of tippy-toeing around out there. Like, they had no confidence whatsoever in their footing, and you guys are jamming those 7-8-inch spikes in the ground and making cuts like you're on AstroTurf out there. It literally, at least watching from where I was, look like it took them a quarter to have the confidence to start playing football.
Yeah, man, you get out there in warmups and, you know, most people aren't moving 100 miles an hour in warmups. And I look across the way just because I'm observing. I want to see how they act and do they look cold. And I'm trying to gain any edge that I can, any extra little bit of confidence to before we go out there, before the whistle. And I look over and I see guys, the DBs just doing 5-yard backpedals and plants as they're working their 45s. And every other time they're slipping. So when you have that type of thing in your head and there's nothing on the line, and it just starts to make you think, okay, what if he runs a hitch and I got to drive on that thing, you know? So then next time, the way you'll notice at the end of the game, Malcolm Butler, I end up running a, what we call a key route. It's on the RPO backside of the run, and A-Rod threw it to me. I go up and catch it. As soon as I hit the ground, there's no games. Now I'm thinking, I have enough room to that sideline. He's running full speed at me, take off to the sideline. So I just take off and I'm just watching him and I'm waiting, because the worst thing that he could do, which is, would be the best typically, is to just put his foot in the ground from where he is and try to, you know, cut my angle off. So I'm running with confidence, knowing that I just jumped up, came back down, my feet are underneath me. I'm running, I'm waiting for him to just make a crazy stick in the ground, which he knows he can't. So he starts putting his feet in the ground and he's like rounding his turn. And once he started doing that, I mean, I knew at that point it's going to be at least a 30-yard gain. So we have those type of advantages, is knowing that he's slipping in warmups and I've seen it. So, you know, that changes the way that I go about it. Now I'm just putting my foot in the ground, not wasting a whole lot of time and helping him out. And that's one of the things that the corners helped me too. Richard Sherman Jr., Kevin King, he told me, he was like, you know, I'm working my feet in the snow pregame. He's like, all the stuff you're doing right now, I wouldn't even advise you do it. The best stuff today is to get your foot in the ground, do what you do, get your foot out your framework, and just take off. Because every time I'm backpedaling, I'm trying to stick in and do what you do, I'm slipping. So, you know, having those extra reps and then just being comfortable, I think that makes a world of a difference.
There's no corner that's going to go out there in the snow and just be like, man, I'm about to strap this boy in the snow. You know what I mean? Like, right. Have to be, because you can't slip.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't, like receiver, you could slip, you could do this, you could do that. If we slip, it's over with. Sports Center, here we come, we cost the team. So right. It's almost like you gotta almost take a hesitation, like, take my time, put it in the ground. There ain't no panic steps. Like, I can't be like, oh, go get him, because then it's over with.
Yeah, and the thing would typically, if you slip in on regular grass, you got somebody else hauling ass from the other side, where now everybody in the same boat, so they can't do it either. You know, so you got a linebacker, if he slipped, he's not as fast as the corner, so then it's just all bad. So you get your feet in the ground and you go, then that's when the animals trouble in that snow.
Devontae, let me ask you, the one team that I was blown away by watching, when you guys went down to Tampa, you jump out 10-0 lead, it looks like you might just blow them out of the building, and all of a sudden, they start blitzing you guys like crazy, right? I mean, they're just coming, and it completely threw you guys off your game offensively. And it's entirely possible Tampa's the next team you see. I mean, that's entirely possible with them being the five there. What happened that game? And what did you guys correct from there to not let that happen again?
You mean specifically with the rushing that they were doing? Or
just ordinarily when teams come after A-Rod, I go, it's going to be a long day for you guys, man, because he's going to pick it apart, right? You're going to make people miss. It's one-on-one. It's all that stuff. But that game, it really seemed to impact you guys.
Yeah, I really, you know, I don't want to talk down on the, you know, the coaches or the O-line or anything, but I think that a combination of what they were able to do up front, real similar to, you know, a healthy Niners team. You know, with the linebackers in that front seven, it's a beast. So you got to respect it. And, you know, based off of what, I don't know if it was a combination of us thinking that they weren't going to come after us as much, mixed with not having a great plan to, you know, get rid of the ball. A lot of the things that we had, you know, schemed up were down the field. So if you're not able to protect as long, then you're obviously not going to be able to get the ball to me, Quez or whoever's in there running those deeper routes. So, you know, our in-game adjustments, I think, have taken a big jump since then. So we're able to, you know, counter that a little bit better than what we were earlier in the year. But yeah, I'll say that that's probably what it was. It was just a mixture of us not having a great plan to stop those guys up front. And then when they were coming, we didn't really dial up the perfect plays to be able to go out there and execute versus the blitz.
Yeah, the one other thing I wanted to ask you guys, you're both veteran players. I did the Philadelphia game the other night, and a big hullabaloo after that game about, you know, they sub in Nate Sudfeld, you know, they take out Jalen Hurts, and, you know, you started hearing everybody in New York screaming at the same time, and, you know, some of the players on the Eagles were getting mad. All of that, what was your take on that situation?
Well, honestly, I didn't see too. All I saw was the aftermath of it, and it was a little bit confusing. I've been hearing from other people just that, you know, it looked like the sideline, even players of that team were thrown off by him getting benched. But it's tough, man, because it's tough for a young guy in that situation, because obviously you don't, you know, if a guy's not playing well, which, like I said, I didn't even really get to see the game like that, but he obviously must have done something to where the coach decided to make a change. But it's tough.
No, they just wanted to see him play. I mean, they wanted to see Nate Sudfeld play. They had it as part of their plan going in there. And it's a less than a one score game. It's a 6-point game.
Yeah, I don't really agree with that. Especially you got a guy in there, you got to let him finish that game. You know, in my eyes, especially a young guy, you could see by some of the, you know, when they had the camera on him on the sideline, he was astonished at the fact that they took him out of the game. He, you know, I think I saw him saying something like, "It's not right," and he had guys that were coming to his aid on that. So, you know, a young guy who has a lot of talent, he came in against us at the end of that game, threw a touchdown, and I think he started to get some momentum going and a little bit of confidence built up. You know, he hasn't really had opportunities since college, with there being no preseason, so he hasn't really played at all. So I think with him establishing itself a little bit, making some plays, getting that offense going, I think it was, you know, it's tough for him to be in that position, because obviously you want to let a guy get full head of steam and see what he can do. And for me as a coach or, you know, manager, whatever it is, I'll go into next year, you know, praying that there's a preseason and try to evaluate the new guy then. I don't think that's the time for it, middle of the game, one score game. But that's just me. You know, I don't know the whole ins and outs of it, but, you know, that's just where I stand with that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, because, you know, I like we always talk about with the Tua and Fitzpatrick situation, you know, that's going on in Miami. I'm not a fan of that. You know, I think they should have let Fitz go and play it out and do whatever they're going to do once they realize that Tua wasn't as effective in those games. You know, I mean, you switch it out early, you see it pretty early. Like, he's checking it down, he's efficient, he's completed 10 passes for 46 yards, you know what I mean? Like, you see it. But in this situation, it didn't make sense unless they're trying to get draft position. Now, it was the difference between the number 9 draft pick and the number 6 draft pick, you know, which makes sense. Just be honest about it. Just say what you got to say. It's not right. It's not going to sit well with your players, but just be honest. Don't try to make up, "Hey, we wanted to evaluate this guy." You had plenty of games to evaluate. You had plenty of season to evaluate the dude. I didn't like that. I didn't like that excuse. I didn't like, "Hey, we're just trying to evaluate guys, and that's the plan going forward." Nobody plans that. You're not going to plan, "Hey, it hurts." Because if you planned it, you would have told him. And if you told Jalen, then cool, he wouldn't have been as astonished. He wouldn't have been sitting there dumbfounded. He'd have been like, "Yeah, well, this was the plan," you know?
Yeah, and if it was your plan, then what if he would have been balling out all game and he's, you know, it's still tight, but he's going out scoring every time they go down, but the defense is giving it up too, and then they go down there. Are you still making that chance, that change? Because it was your plan. So if it was your plan, then that should mean that, you know, regardless of the circumstance, you know, you're going to stick to what you initially sought out to do. And I can't with confidence say that that's what they would have done if he was just going out there throwing the ball lights out the entire game, because then that would have really been crazy. And then we would have been dealing with something even wilder right now. But, I don't know what type of plan that is. But, you know, I hope it doesn't throw his confidence off, because I think he'll be a hell of a player.
I agree.
Sounds like, Devontae, that Richard was one of your sort of idols growing up. And you first time you played against him, was it just a little different? I mean, I can remember I played against the Pittsburgh Steelers my second game of my career. I literally went out on the field to watch them warm up, because I had to get over the fact that I was playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers that won 4 Super Bowls during the decade of the 70s when I'm playing high school ball. When you went out against Richard the first time, tell me about it.
It was a lot, just because my first game, it was the first game of the NFL season, you know, Thursday night. It was just a lot going on. So I didn't really have the celebrity feeling, but it was definitely because, you know, you go from being in camp and I'm making some plays and some stuff like that. My teammates are making me feel good going into the season. And then you go up against a guy who's been doing it at a high level for years now, and he's at the top of his game. You know, and at this point, I'm just thinking, you know, make sure I'm doing my stuff right. I got more stuff to worry about than this celebrity across from me. Obviously, it was crazy, but one of the things that really made me feel most some type of way is that I felt like he was just looking right through me out there. Like, it was my first year. I felt like he was not worried about me. Like, you know, like people talk about how much Richard Sherman talked. I'm like, well, let's see how much he talked. I get out there, man didn't even acknowledge me on the field. So I'm like, okay. Okay. So that more so had a lasting feeling than anything when I got out there. I said, this is what it's like. So he just waiting for Jordy to get over here to start talking some craziness to him. So I said, you know what? Let me see if I can end up being somebody one day and maybe this dude will talk some mess to me out here. We'll see.
That's what people be like, man, why you ain't talking? Because I don't talk unless it get disrespectful. Like,
right. And I have noticed that. That's one thing I've noticed. There's certain people who talk a lot, like Akib would talk more than Rich would. But I think that Akib had like the crazy stigma to him, but he wasn't crazy. He was just trying to get in your head all the time. Rich wasn't really like that and still isn't. It's more like when we play against each other, we've had our battles and stuff where I think we had more heated battles, like when you started getting into like 2016, 2017 time. But that was when I started emerging a little bit more. And he was like, okay, well, and I took that as like, hey, well, now he's paying attention to me, guys. Right. I finally got a reaction. I didn't want to get slapped upside the head, but hey, we'll take it. But yeah, it's been a cool experience though, just because like I said, seeing him when I was in high school, coming out on that field, looking up to him, seeing him wear the one sleeve. I went out there and wore the one sleeve. I got, you know, they used to bring some stuff. Yeah, that's real though. You know, they used to send like their old used stuff over to us from the across the street, and I'll go throwing the same gloves he had. You know, it was the trendy stuff at the time, so it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't looking at it like, you know, this is my idol, but I was like, this is a dude who plays at a real high level. And, you know, he's another black dude in Palo Alto area too. You know, we both from, you know, him being from LA, growing up where he's from, I'm from East Palo Alto. So we had a lot of things I could kind of relate to him on. I guess that's kind of what had me gravitate toward him a little bit.
Do you ever go back to EPA?
That's where my people, my grandma, you know, you start getting grandma, grandpas, they're not trying to leave nowhere. They want to stay right back where it is. So that's where she stays. So I still get out there, see them. I got, I always do my camp every year out there too. So I'm back there. I live in Danville now, like I said, so I'm kind of out the area. It's maybe like 45 minutes out the area. Yeah. Just in the middle of nowhere, you know, far enough away from my mom to where she can pull up on me to babysit, but can't pop up on me.
But can't pop up. For no reason. Right.
So, yeah, I still get out there, though.
Okay. That's what's up. Yeah, I mean, whenever I play A-Rod, especially when it was McCarthy, like, I know it's all about his checks. It's going to be on him. Like no offense to McCarthy, but A-Rod was running that offense full-fledged since right. I've seen it. And mm-hmm. When we were playing y'all, I'm literally looking at A-Rod the whole time because I done studied every signal. I done studied everything. That's why sometimes he stopped signaling to my side because it's like, hey, unless y'all done changed everything today just for us, like, I'm going to know something.
Well, Rich is the one I was talking about earlier, Chris, when I told you about the way we can communicate with no fans now. You got to do like that, which is so – and coaches worry about this stuff more than what they do. I always tell Matt, he'll be talking to me about my splits on different routes and – just as one example, he'll be like, make sure you have the same split on this versus that last one. So we don't want them to see it, know the route's coming. I said, Matt, you're giving these guys too much credit. There is like three guys out there who are looking for splits and can truly diagnose it. This guy's like the dude who picked off A-Rod from the Bucks earlier this year. He told everybody after the game that he knew based off where I aligned and the down and distance that I was running the route off.
I saw it.
I said, I got on the media next week and I said, I don't even like talking down on people, but no, he did not. You did not know that. There's three people and two that I can with confidence say right now, one of them is on the Zoom right now. And the other one, you know him as well. Another dreadhead I play with, Tremont Williams. He is another one where, another example, I'm in camp and we got a hook curl concept. I'm running. He sees the number two go to the flat right away. So he's sitting at 10 yards and not moving. Chris, I'm running 1,000 miles an hour at this man. He's like, he breaks on it. I like break on my route, 45 to go. He come and knock it down. I ask him after practice, I'm like, how did you know? He said, I saw number two go. You were too deep to run a slant. So I knew it wasn't slant with the shoot route. So I knew that you're not running a go route now. So I'm waiting. You pass the slant depth. So now here comes the curl. So when I see that people can diagnose that, you start to become wary of that because that makes you a little bit insecure. Like, do these dudes really know all my routes like that? And then I play against more and more people and then same type of situation. So now I'm thinking in my head, this guy knows I'm running a curl and I beat the hell out of a guy on the curl. And then I'm like, well, that must be for the elite because not everybody's playing like that. I had Tremont Williams. And like you said, Rich is sitting here eyeballing A-Rod because he knows his signals. So when we get out there on the field with no fans, now we're looking like this. He's looking for a hand signal. And then now we get to speak in Chinese to each other. And then we can change the route without right. him knowing. So the no fans is good for a guy like Rich.
Do you remember last year, the regular season game we played y'all? Y'all ran this play action RPO. I had been looking for that for like 6 years with A-Rod. I was like, I'm going to get him one time. And our safety finally showed the disguise. I backed off. I said, we got him. I'm about to get him.
Yeah, and I remember that too.
And he pulled the ball down. I had been waiting for that for years.
You was ready to take that and go the long way, huh?
Go the long way. I was going to see if you was going to run me down. I was going to go to the opposite pile.
Hey, man, I would have had to duck my head because, like I said, it's certain people can recognize things where, you know, once that ball's in the air, and he played receiver, this thing is picked off. So you get that respect from me, and I know A-Rod definitely respects you that same way.
I appreciate it. Then you out and up on my – you adjusted so quick.
Yeah.
Did I miss it?
Hey, and here's a little secret. Some people don't know. I'll share this secret about me because – just so you can know my mentality about just route running and how I attack everything. So you know me. I want to try to abuse you. I don't want people anywhere near me when I catch the right. ball. So every time I run a route, I want to have as much separation as possible. In the rare event where I run a route, so say I got like a 15-yard stop route, come back down or a comeback or something. If Rich was to undercut that thing and I look and A-Rod's not throwing it, what I do is loop straight up the field every time in it, like right in the same motion to almost make you feel like it was the route. And because I know that you covered it well, but I don't want you to know you covered it well. So I'll do that. I do it all the time. You'll see it. And then, you know, my coach will come and ask me, like on Monday, we'll be watching film. He was like, did he pump you on this? Like, you know, I'll have a comeback. I'll be like, coach, no, he didn't pump me. I checked to make sure, because if he did throw it, I would have had to break it up because the dude was driving on it. So if I'll come out here and then if he doesn't throw it, then I'll loop it up right away because I want you to feel like, oh, like you figured it out, but then it's like, damn, well, was that a stutter go or what just happened?
Bro,
right
you
now?
Didn't got me in Lambo a couple times like that on slants where I was like, bang, I drove the slant. You just pop, whipped it back right. out. I said, There's no way.
And then I get the guy saying, Watch the sluggo coming. I'm like, what you don't even know is it wasn't even a sluggo, man. It was just a slant. I'm sorry. I just had to make you feel like you didn't cover it.
You just didn't want to give him the satisfaction of knowing that he got you.
Correct.
Oh, he never gives us any kind of satisfaction. And then what's crazy is A-Rod will look off and do all that, and he'll do that just like to make sure he ain't covered, and then he'll get the ball on the bomb. Like, right, A-Rod will find him. Because, like, A-Rod's the only quarterback I know can roll away to like the short side of the field and have a receiver running outside the numbers to the field, 70 yards down the field, and throw it confidently on time and not make him stop.
Like, on the money. On the money.
All right. One last question for you, Devontae. It's been fun having you on here. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much did the drafting of Jordan Love have to do with A-Rod's season this year?
Honestly, I would have to say 1. If we got to go scale 1 to 10, I would say 1. I think that people disrespect A-Rod and, like, stuff like that isn't what drives Aaron. He's the type of guy who's internally motivated, and he is a beast. And I think, like he said a couple times before, that his down years are really like career years for certain guys. So we've gotten really spoiled over the years from the great plays that he's consistently made. I think that this was overdue, mixed with not being able to see us, not being able to spend any time together because of COVID, the whole thing. We just all kind of grew closer together. And I think with that, it's allowed us to become and take everything to a new level with our connection personally and then as a team too. So as much as I want to say, just to make it spicier, that has something to do with it, I don't think it had anything to do with it just because he's a beast. He has 2 MVPs, about to be 3 under his belt already. So when you're that type of caliber of player and you're just never satisfied with any type of greatness you achieve, then, I mean, this is the type of products you get.
Well, I don't know if anybody else likes listening to it, but I feel like I'm listening to two brain surgeons talk about opening up the skull or something with you two talking about your battles. It's been awesome, man. Congratulations. Best of luck going into the playoffs. I know you guys are excited, and it's been a fantastic year for you in particular, but for your team in general.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. Thank you too, Rich. I appreciate y'all having me on here.
Yeah, congrats, Tate, man. I can't wait to see you on the first team All-Pro this year. They finally going to give you your respect. It's going to be big
that's,
time.
That's the plan. I hope, man. I've been waiting for it. I thought a little bit better game in this last one would have solidified it, but we're going to see, hopefully.
I think it's solid. I think it's you and Diggs. I mean, it's going to be a hard they're going to be hard-pressed to not give it to y'all. But, yeah. You know, crazy things happen.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Good luck.
All right.
All right. Bring in George Shahuri, our expert on all things gambling, except when he's going against me, although I do think I got whipped this week. So that's not good. But we have our great sponsor is DraftKings. And as you can imagine, come playoff time, playoffs, that's right, the playoffs, then we're going to talk about football only this week. Because what better place to get on all the action than DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. If you haven't checked it out, there is no better time to sign up and start cashing in with some winnings. With the promo code PFF, all you need is one touchdown to be scored during Saturday's football games, and you're going to double your money. How about that, George?
That's what they call a really good deal. I would anticipate the games on Saturday will yield at least one touchdown. We've got the Bills playing. They're seemingly scoring every time they touch the ball. So you should go make that happen. It's a great, the playoffs, in my opinion, Chris, the playoffs are the best time to bet on sports because each game you can watch in isolation. Everyone's watching with you. Everyone's betting on the game. So there's, if you're getting into it for the first time, like this is the best time to make it happen. And you can double, you get a nice little double down to start your playoffs off with promo code PFF at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Plus, they've got the national championship game coming up Monday after. So you'll get some odds boost for that as well. So go download the app. It's very easy. It's very easy to both deposit and withdraw money, which isn't always the case on some of these sportsbook apps. Use promo code PFF and have a shot at doubling your money if a single touchdown is scored in one of Saturday's football games. I have a feeling that will happen. This is only for a limited time. It's only for this week. You must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9 with it. But if you have a gambling problem, it ends during the playoffs. We're going to take care of that for you.
There you go. All right. You got me last week, but you actually made one more pick than I did. So I don't know how this stinking system works here. But anyway, this week we only get four picks each. That's it. That's the new rule. We have the Colts traveling to the Bills to take on Buffalo, who right now, George, if you had to say, forget which name of the team we're talking about or who's playing quarterback or any, you had to say who's the hottest team in football right now, it's the Buffalo Bills.
I'm with you 100%. And that is saying something as much about the Bills as I think it is about the Chiefs right now. We haven't seen them blow a team out in a while. And we actually saw them struggle a little bit with the Dolphins, right? They ended up winning that game, but you know, it was close. The Bills just absolutely torched the Dolphins. They're fourth overall this season in offense on a per play basis. And Josh Allen, this is the craziest stat I think of the season, Chris. Josh Allen's PFF grade ranked one spot above Russell Wilson.
It's amazing. I mean, what he did, especially when you consider where Russell Wilson was in the first three quarters of the season here. But Josh Allen has just turned into a fantastic quarterback. And he's intimidating. When he takes off to run the ball, he's not looking to juke people out. He's running over guys.
He has done what I think is the best turnaround that I've seen in my memory from what he was his first couple of seasons to what he has been this last year. I mean, he's completing 80% of his throws from a clean pocket. He's been amazing, but that's the reason that the Buffalo Bills are a 7-point favorite right now. It's been fluctuating between 6.5. Right now it's at 7 on DraftKings Sportsbook. Total is at 52. So they anticipate points to be scored. and they anticipate the Bills to win by a touchdown. The Colts, we've talked about how they're kind of, you know, they're good, but are they great? Are the Colts going to keep it close?
I mean, is Jonathan Taylor going to be able to play four corners offense, right? I think that's how I would try to play it if I were Frank Reich. You know, you're going to pound the football in there. Maybe you get some weather to deal with. You just try and get it to the fourth quarter and see what happens with Phillip Rivers and hope that Josh Allen kind of melts down a little bit. I mean, we saw him last year in the playoff game. He had a couple of those wild plays that he's been known for. But I don't see any other way for the Colts here.
It's tough, man. Seven is a lot of points. I'm going to give you a teaser, though. Okay. This is one of my favorite plays here.
This is like grad school. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, it's a Saturday teaser. So this is going to be the first leg of one of my teasers. Now, seven is a lot of points. But on a teaser, you pick two games and you get to change the spread in your direction by six. So I'm going to tease the Bills down to a 1-point favorite. So all they've got to do is basically win the game. And I win that first leg of the teaser. So it's going to be the first leg. I'm not going to spoil what the next one is yet, but I'm going to let you know that's one of my picks.
All right. So who are you picking in the game?
All right. If I have to pick against the spread, I'll go with the Colts.
All right. I'm going with the Bills. There you go. I'm going to give up seven. I think they're going to win by at least 10. The Rams against the Seahawks here. We've got the Seahawks are 4.5-point favorite. And does anybody have figured out yet whether or not Jared Goff is going to play quarterback or not for the Rams?
So he hasn't been upgraded, but the anticipation is that he is going to play. That is what this line is kind of saying here, because if he wasn't going to play, this would probably be 6.5 with our boy John Wolford. So I anticipate that it will be Goff, but I don't know. I just don't have a ton of faith in the Seahawks right now. Their offense is just ninth in the NFL. As we just mentioned, Russell Wilson, he didn't even, you know, he was sixth in PFF grade, but that really fell off from where he was at the beginning of the season. DK Metcalf fell off a little bit at the end of the season. And I love what the Rams are able to do from a scheme perspective defensively. Like, they really compress the game on you. At 4.5, this is the game I feel least confident about, I think, but I will go with the Rams.
I'm going to take the Seahawks off of, I can't believe that Goff off of that surgery is an improved pass rush for Seattle is going to be able to hang in there for four quarters. That's too short a period of time in my mind. I mean, plus you've got Jalen Ramsey's been whipping up on DK Metcalf. Is that going to continue forever? I'm taking Russell Wilson in this one. So right. We're on opposite sides on two straight games.
This is why the playoffs are great.
High drama. All right. The Buccaneers against the Washington football team. I can't believe I went the entire broadcast without saying the R word. The second the game ends, I throw out the R word. How in the hell did I do that? I was mad the whole flight home leaving that place. I could not believe Al had two screw ups. I made it the whole game, and when the game's over, then I say it.
And it was clear that you were giving the Washington football team and Ron Rivera their due. Like, it was a great thing that you were going to say.
I felt for you in that moment. Like, I got shot in the chest. It was horrible. It was horrible. All right. So here's my question on this game. Alex Smith, you know, we saw what he did with his calf. We saw that when they flushed him out of the pocket, he was having a tough time. No question about it. The Buccaneers are a team that impacted Aaron Rodgers when they blitzed him. I've got to think that they're going to be coming after Alex Smith nonstop.
I am with you here. Now, no, Devin White does hurt things because he's kind of their ace in the hole from a blitzing perspective. But I just question, even with a mediocre defense, and the Eagles will not be mistaken for a mediocre defense anytime soon. They're a bad defense.
And they didn't play anybody.
Right. And the Washington football team barely beat a bad Eagles team that was trying to lose the game. So I am really struggling to get on board with, yeah, they can keep this one close. And everyone's reasoning for that is that the front four is going to get to Brady. But what I think people are misconstruing or not realizing here is that Tom Brady is still getting the ball out of his hands really quickly. 2.4 seconds is his average time to throw. And of late, they've been throwing on early downs, first and second down more frequently. They're the best offense on first and second down over the past 4 weeks since the bye. Okay. So this is a new offense. It's Brady's offense. This is the second leg of my teaser. So it'll be the Bills and the Bucks. The Bucks will be teased down to two. That's important because you get through seven, which is a key number, and you get through three, which is another key number. So the Bills and the Bucks are my Saturday teaser. And I will take the Bucks as well, just in the game.
So does this mean that you get an extra pick again this week?
You can hop on the teaser too, Chris.
I'll take the teaser. I like the teaser too. That sounds good. But you know, the other part of this thing is, and who knows what's going to happen to Mike Evans, but Antonio Brown looks like he is getting hot right now.
Yeah. Yes, he has. So you just talked to Devontae Adams. Devontae Adams is the most targeted receiver in the NFL for good reason, because he's always open, right? He talked for 15 minutes about the ways that he gets open. Antonio Brown, since the bye, has been the third most frequently targeted receiver. And that's saying something, because they have other guys there in Tampa Bay. So while I'm worried about Mike Evans, and I think he's playing for sure, think about what Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, Gronk, this offense is just too good, in my opinion.
They just have to put it together at the right time. This is one of those teams from the beginning of the season, I keep saying they're going to put it together one day. They're going to put the whole thing together. They haven't quite yet, but I'm still counting on it. So we'll see. All right.
You're taking the Bucs then?
Yeah, for sure. Ravens against Titans here. We've got the Titans as 3.5-point dogs at home against the Ravens. And the Ravens do have sort of that look in their eye. Mm-hmm. But sometimes a certain running back can take that look out of your eye.
Man, this is – Eric and I argued about this one a little bit. This is a really tough game. And I want to ask you this. The Ravens – have looked really impressive, okay? But they haven't played anybody. And the Titans have played the Packers in Lambeau, which is going to be a very different situation than facing the Packers in Lambeau. And then they played an angry Deshaun Watson in Houston, right? So I wouldn't say that the Titans are exactly, you know, cupcaking their way into this. Who has the advantage there? Is it the Ravens, who have basically just been beating the crap out of anybody and aren't, you know, weathered or any, or is it the Titans, who have faced tough teams coming in?
I always like better competition coming in. And so I hear you on that, but I don't know if the Titans can stop anybody from running the football and the Ravens damn near broke an NFL record against the Bengals running the football the other day. I just have a feeling to me, the two teams that I wouldn't want to play right now that aren't the number one seeds would be Baltimore and Buffalo. I think those two teams look like they're peaking at the right time, but I hear you on the competition, you know, but the Ravens have to just still be so bitter about what happened to them. They're the number one seed. They're the team to beat in the AFC. The Titans come in and just rip them apart. You know, if there's ever a moment where this team's going to step up and play big, I feel like this is it.
So it sounds like you're taking the Ravens then.
I am. I'm giving the 3.5.
All right. Oh my God. This is so hard. I'm going to take the Ravens too. I'm flipping. I was on the Titans early. I think you've convinced me. Man, that is a tough one. That is a tough one. I might take the over too at 54. I'm not saying it's one of my picks. I'm just saying a lot of points are going to be scored in this game.
I think you've got a fix in, because your guy's keeping score over there. So every time you mention what you might do, if it wins, then it counts as a win for you.
No, well, he's putting the actual picks up there. You can check the ledger next time. That is such a tough one. I mean, I wouldn't fault anyone for taking Titans plus 3.5 at home. That is, man, it's
going to be right. a tough game. Are we picking all these or just those four?
We got one more.
All right, go ahead. Hit me with it.
We're not going to talk about your game because, you know, you've got all the insider information, obviously.
I can get in trouble with anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Bears-Saints. The Saints at home, 9.5-point favorite, total of 47.5 on the DraftKings Sportsbook. Chris, Mitchell Trubisky versus Drew Brees. I mean, that is a massive mismatch. Is there a 10-point difference between those two guys right now?
I need another teaser. Yeah. it's so many points. You want to go, come on, there's no way, right? And mm-hmm. the Bears defense is pretty good against anybody except Aaron Rodgers. What the heck? I'm going to take the Bears. I'm just going to take the Bears. I'm going to start the game with a 9.5-point lead, and that then I'm just going to be confident. That's it. I'm just going to be confident.
Yeah, I'm sadly going to take the Bears too. But I think the play that I like the most here, again, is actually points to be scored in this game. So I think that would be how I would go. 10 points is a lot. Here's the thing that stuck out to me, Chris. Drew Brees, his PFF grade this year is 73. It ranks 20th. So as bad as Mitchell Trubisky is, and he's not great, Drew Brees has not been lighting the world on fire as he has been in the past. So I think the Bears could somehow keep it close. I say that now, they'll lose by 30.
You know, Trubisky might just turn into Taysom Hill in this one. He might just run all over the field. He certainly is capable of that.
He is. I would say that one kind of component of this game that worries me is the Saints' defensive line at full strength being able to manhandle the Bears a little bit. You know, that'd be my concern. But I think this is too many points too. I think 10 is probably the right number. This is close, obviously, at 9.5. I would have made it more like 8.5. So
we both have the Bears?
We both have the Bears. There's no way that can end poorly. No way.
I'm happy to get a push on that one because I have no faith in that pick whatsoever. Oh boy! All right, George. There we go. I've got to make a comeback this week.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Thanks.